Hello, Indigenous Earthlings. Here we are again, seven revolutions later, balancing into yet another Express Yourself. I'm Luke Nessler. Well, it's only taken 3 years for the Our Town One Table event to establish itself as a quintessential Carbondale gathering that people look forward to. The Our Town One Table event is coming up next weekend, and Sondi Reef is here to tell us about it. Hi, Sondi.
Hi.
Welcome back.
I can't believe it's been a year since we were sitting here talking about this same event.
Is it going fast for you, too?
It sure is.
Why do you think that is?
Well, they used to say it was age.
Yeah.
But now I hear my children and their friends saying, it's all going so fast. So
yeah.
I don't have the answer to that, Luke.
I don't either, you know, because I'm noticing that the younger people are feeling that, too. So it's not an old people disease.
And every day is a good day, but they're going too fast.
Well, next Sunday, not this Sunday, but the one after that, will be a good day in Carbondale.
It sure will. And we're really most excited about it. It has become a whole town event. And we hope next year we get even bigger. What can I tell you? Because we would like to see everybody in town out for this particular event.
Well, that's a worthy desire, but I thought Carbondale was the town where it's not bigger is not better.
For this event, it is. If we could all gather together. This year, we're going from Main up to Soap, from Main Street up to Sopris on 4th Street.
Wow.
So after this, we have to make a decision. Do we want to go down 4th? Do we want to go across Main Street? But 4th Street is such a great location for this.
That's a long way.
That's
Main Street to Sopris. And how many people are you expecting for this?
Well, so far we have 92 tables reserved. So we will hit close to 1,300 people. And hopefully the rest of these people in town will just make their reservations for a table before next Tuesday. Because as of next Tuesday, I have to know how many tables we're setting up.
So it's not too late.
Not too late.
How do people reserve a table?
People reserve their table online. It's Our Town, the number one table.com at gmail.com. And please make your reservation as soon as possible. There are tables for 8, 6, or there are some tables for 10. And if you need more than one table, at the time you make your reservation, say that, and they'll ask how many people you have in your group. The theme this year, because the next day is the
eclipse.
It is the eclipse. We are having celestial heavens over Carbondale.
Huh.
But as you know, in Carbondale, anything goes. And where there is a prize for the best decorated table, it's okay if you don't decorate your table.
Okay.
It's not a forced thing, but I know that people enjoy when that wonderful trophy is handed to the next group, and it's lots of fun to see how creative our town truly is.
So there's an actual trophy that you
win. Oh, yes.
Wow. Tell me about the trophy.
Same trophy. It's a lovely silver trophy.
Okay.
It is a vase, and it comes filled with flowers for everyone at your tables.
Huh.
And good chocolate. And last year's group, I know, each passed the trophy from person to person during the year. So, and they will be handing it over to the next winner.
Okay. Who decides the winner? Is that
there
you?
There is absolutely not.
No.
There is a panel of judges.
Okay.
And they will be walking the street to look at all of the tables, and then they make the decision.
What are they looking for? Do you know? Have they let you know?
Creativity.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, they really have a meeting beforehand, and there are guidelines, and they go from there.
Huh. The last year's winner, can you describe what that table setting looked like? Do you remember?
Yes, I do. It was a pretty amazing table where everyone came dressed in white, and the entire table was white with a chandelier. I'm talking with my hands as I'm describing this, with a chandelier hanging above. And it was just beautifully done.
Huh.
And the group worked hard on it.
So if people, there might be some people hearing this, Sandy, who don't know exactly how it works. So you're saying that they need to reserve a table and then it's a potluck, right?
It's a potluck with your table.
Yes.
You know, so if you are six people, you decide amongst the six of you who is bringing what and who's decorating or not. You do have to bring your own chairs, your own table settings, and your own decorations. We do provide the table.
Uh-huh. And if there's an opening at your table, you let those people let you know, and then someone who needs a seat.
Well, this year we have two community tables, which is very exciting. And we want to thank Melissa and the Orchard because they have two totally open tables. So if you and your family are interested, on the email address, let them know that you want to sit at one of the Orchard tables. So it will be a great way to meet new neighbors, new friends, new townspeople.
And if you can't make a potluck contribution, there are places you can go to purchase some dishes, right, to bring
that
to the...
you can do. And also, I really shouldn't say this, but the Orchard is providing two tables of food also.
Oh.
There also will be free coffee set up, and we will have wonderful strolling musicians. And we have no amplified music, so it's strictly the strolling musicians going up and down. This is for you to talk to your friends and neighbors and have a good evening.
And there's no alcohol allowed, correct?
That is the town law.
Yeah, yeah. And let's see. What was I going to say? We're both spacing out, Sandy. What should we do about that?
Well, I'm not spacing out. I just think it's a great event. And, I mean, there's so many varieties of dishes that people make, and it's great. And I'll never forget 2 years ago somebody said, oh, who was that judge of food? Because somebody creatively brought nothing and went around to every table saying they were judging the food. But it is lots of fun.
Oh,
and
I found
this year exceptionally exciting because in January people started calling me as to when was the date scheduled.
Wow.
And I also got a call from Glenwood who said, is it all right if we have this dinner also? Because it's so great to see a whole town together. And I explained that it wasn't an original idea. This probably was started in the vineyards across the country and then moved to towns. And our town is just so perfect for this. So it is not an original idea. The name is an original. But I think Glenwood is having a close the bridge party.
Oh.
For the town. And I don't know all the details of that, but I thought it was wonderful that we as a town have done such a great job that other towns want to do it too. And that's,
well, if you live in
compliment.
Another town, they can come. They can still come to this, right?
Yes, they can.
Yeah, yeah. But it's just a matter of reserving a spot.
Right, and I just thought it was neat that other towns want to do this as well. I think it's great. Because it is. It is a community gathering together. And there's nothing like breaking bread as a large group.
That's true. So our town, the number one table at gmail.com is the way to reserve a spot.
Correct. We are also looking for volunteers.
Okay.
For next Sunday at 2:00 in the afternoon to help set up the tables. We have a lot of tables to set up. So if you're available, please, if you don't mind, either calling me or getting on the website and letting them know so that I will know, and it'll be great. And the other volunteer jobs we have are just to be greeters to help people find their tables.
That's great. Can we say your number on the air for people
you
to call?
You can.
All right. It's 305-710-0826.
That's it.
So give Sandy a call if you can help and if you want to reserve a table. And Sandy, this is great. Thank you for spearheading this.
Well, I appreciate it. And it's also great to have the town of Carbondale as my partner now. And I want to thank both Linda and Melissa for their input because they've been terrific.
All righty. Thank you, Linda. Thank you, Melissa. And thank you, Sandy Reef.
You're welcome.
All right. Stay with us. More to come on Express Yourself. That is the Deer with something called Alchemical Happiness from their CD Tempest and Rapture. The Deer play a free show on Sunday afternoon in Cypress Park. It's the second Summer Sunday Concert Series. Rosewood Divine and Pearl and Wood local bands open for the Deer this Sunday. And if you can't make it down to the park with your friends and neighbors, well, you can tune in to KDNK for a live broadcast starting at 4. Three local authors will give a reading next Wednesday at the Carbondale Branch Library at 6 p.m. Last week, we heard from Corey Carnan and Linda Flynn about their debut novels. And today, we hear from Jill Shealy, who published her 12th book last year. Jill is well known for her Frasier the Dog series of children's books. Her newest book, The Adventures of Kip in Aspen and Snowmass, marks a new phase in her career. I caught up with Jill yesterday to talk about that and her process. Did you get a rainstorm last night?
Oh, my goodness. The thunder, I thought, was going to blow the house up.
Now, you're in Snowmass.
I'm actually right across from Woody Creek in Brush Creek.
Oh, okay.
And it was, I mean, my poor dogs were scared to death.
Wow. Now, did you ever write a story about dogs being scared by lightning and thunder?
No, I actually never did, but it's a good idea.
Huh.
Right. They're always scared, especially when the fireworks go off.
Well,
they
I know.
Freak out.
I know. You know, I wonder what it is. I guess I could see that. You know, it's kind of a scary thing inherently.
It's a very scary thing. I don't know why, but yeah, they just, they don't like it. And my little Kip, the one we're going to talk about today, he's actually my daughter's dog, but he gets so freaked out when we go up to the bells and they bomb that he will actually run down the hill. He just freaks out. And I think that was because her husband used to own a horseback riding operation. And I think, you know, from when the guys used to go up shooting in the backcountry, I think that really scared him.
Oh, how about that? How old is Kip?
Kip is 3, and my other dog, Ranger, is 5.
Okay, now you haven't written about Ranger.
I have not written about Ranger.
I've
actually written several stories, but I haven't published them.
Oh, okay. Huh. But Kip is already a star.
Kip is already a star, yes.
Well, your book published last year called Adventures of Kip in Aspen and Snowmass, rather sedate adventures, I would say, compared to the ones that Frasier was involved with. Is that because he's still a youngin'?
It is. And, you know, we wanted to go a different route and sort of just take people for a little travelogue around Aspen and Snowmass. So, yeah, he's definitely not the rescue dog that Fraser was. But, you know, he might grow into one. You never know.
Okay. Now, in true life, in real life, Fraser was a rescue dog, wasn't he?
He was. He wasn't a trained rescue dog, but he did go on several little adventures and had a lot of calls from neighbors and, like, telling me what he had done. So, yes, I considered him a rescue dog.
Okay.
And on the other hand, too, there were several children over those years that he lived, 14 years, that had been actually terrorized by a dog, had been bitten in the face. And they would come to us because we were doing pet therapy at the hospital. I don't know how they found out about us, but we would come over and just sit with them for a day and, you know, show them that, you know, if you don't go up to a dog, and, you know, these were kids that probably just went up and petted a dog when the dog wasn't ready for it, that the dog could actually be really nice. So Fraser would hang out with them and get them kind of comfortable again.
Do you see those same kind of empathetic qualities in Kip that Fraser displayed?
You know, Kip is definitely a herding dog, so he's a little more aggressive. And I think that Ranger is definitely more that kind of dog. He wouldn't hurt a fly. And I'm not saying that Kip would, but, you know, I haven't been in those situations yet to know. But he has come to school, and so the kids all, you know, at least the country day school know him.
Okay.
And he's very gentle with them.
Uh-huh.
But his nature is very protective, so I haven't tested that one out yet.
So I guess that will manifest a little differently story-wise than
yes.
Fraser. Interesting.
Yes, exactly. They're very different beings, different breeds.
Uh-huh. Kip is Australian Shepherd? You said he's a herding?
He is, purebred. He's what they call a blue merle.
So he's kind of high-strung.
A little bit, although he's very mellow. He loves to be loved. I mean, he just loves to cuddle up, and yes, he's a lover.
Okay. Well, as I said, this one, The Adventures of Kip and Aspen and Snowmass, rather sedate. You're taking a tour of Aspen and Snowmass to all the dog-friendly places around town, the Wheeler Opera House. I didn't know that the Little Nell allowed dogs in the lobby.
Yes, they do. In fact, we did a book signing there last year, which was really fun. We probably had about 60 kids. And Kip was there, and Ranger stopped by later, and the kids were thrilled because the Nell served up their delicious hot chocolate. But yeah, dogs are allowed in the lobby.
How about that?
Yeah.
Now,
I know, it's pretty cute, and they do, and that's really true, they do have a pet menu.
How about that? I didn't know. Now, you know, Aspen's famous for being dog friendly, no doubt about that. So it's interesting to see some of the places for a newcomer to the Valley, to see the places where dogs are allowed.
Yeah, and they're really happy. There are a lot of hotels that allow dogs in them, and I think they can find that on the website. But yeah, it's a very dog friendly town, and we get stopped all the time where people really miss their dogs at home, and then they have to get a little pet from our dog. So it's pretty cute.
Do you think if Fraser had lived in, I don't know, Glenwood Springs or Denver or New York City, that the books about Fraser might have been not as popular?
I never would have written them if we had lived there, because he wouldn't have had those kind of adventures.
Okay.
I mean, the true story is that my husband was on Mountain Rescue, and he was on Ski Patrol. So that's one of the reasons why, you know, all the stories kept coming to me. And then our own family had many adventures. I was the one who was actually caught in the avalanche. So, and my husband and I were up on the backside of the mountain doing a hut trip. And same thing, like the Star Mountain book, is where the blizzard came in and we literally couldn't see a foot ahead of us. So I kind of would weave those stories in, and if I lived in Denver, unless I was coming up to the mountains quite often, I just don't think that, you know, would have had the topics to write about.
And do you think having been set in Aspen was helpful to the popularity of the series?
I think so, yeah, because we were able to really work on going into all the different bookstores and the schools. And anytime there was an event, you know, we would talk to kids from out of town about safety issues and And just, you know, they got to meet the dog, which was really cool. So often, you know, you see a little children's story and you'll hear about it, but you won't actually get to meet the real character. And Fraser was, you know, with me for all these book signings. And we'd bring the backpack and we'd talk to the kids about, you know, the it's called the Ice Picks, the little picks for life, where in the Maroon Bells book, when Courtney falls through the ice, she has them in her sleeves of her coat, and she uses them. They're spring-loaded to not go further into the water. So, you know, those are things we show the kids, and usually from the city, even in Aspen, they've never seen those before.
Huh.
So, you know, we pull things out of the backpack and kind of show kids how things work.
Okay. Now, you have for many years done readings in local schools, and I gather also around the country and around the world, too. Do you still do that?
I do. You know, whenever there's an opportunity, I go. Oftentimes, you know, school boards or, you know, PTAs will send me to a different town. Oftentimes, there'll be a family member who will be in Aspen, and they'll see me, and they'll come up and say, oh, you know, can you come to California, Dana Point, or wherever, and do a whole assembly? And sure, I do that.
Huh. As you're writing the books, Jill Shealy, do you test out the stories on live kid audiences?
I do. That's a really good question. I absolutely do. Because, for instance, when I did the Snowmass Fraser book, that was my very first one, and I probably read it to about four classes just to make sure it wasn't too scary and that the kids liked it and the parents liked it. And in that particular book, it was really interesting. One mother was at the library. She had a very interesting comment. What happens is Courtney gets caught in an avalanche, and Fraser is tied up below and gets off of his rope and comes up and saves her. But the mother was really quite interested, and she said, well, I don't understand how the dog got loose. Well, she didn't have a dog. If Fraser had sensed that Courtney was in trouble, he would have chewed right through that rope. So we changed the story and actually had the rope around his neck chewed off, so it looked like he had, you know, chewed it.
Okay.
So we definitely use comments, and the kids at the elementary school in the Star Mountain book, at the very end, we had a little, you know, they're all back at the cabin, safe and sound, after surviving this huge blizzard, and they're outside building a snowman. And this little boy said, oh, could that be a snow dog? So we changed it to a snow dog. Okay. So, yeah, we get comments all the time before the book gets published, just to see if there's any tweaking we can do.
Well, the Fraser books, and to some extent the Kip book, at least the first one here, maybe to a lesser extent, but are marked by outdoor discovery. They're always set in the outdoors, which I suppose is kind of the point, isn't it, for you?
Yes, because, I mean, we kind of live our lives outside.
Yeah, yeah, and that's what you want to pass on to the kids, especially the ones who maybe don't.
Exactly.
Also, the books are marked by there's always a slightly scary situation, but something that always can be solved or faced with the help of others.
Right.
And lessons in safety. There's always a safety lesson in there, too, isn't there?
Yes, except for, of course, now in the Green Book, which is the Aspen Mountain one, where they find Maggie in the mine shaft. We had done all these lessons, and we decided, well, you know, I think that this one will just add a chocolate chip cookie recipe at the end.
That's great. When did you first start writing, Jill?
Well, I did Christmas in Aspen in 1980, published that in 1980. Huh. So I've been at it for a long time.
Uh-huh. And the Fraser dogs came about in the late 80s?
Well, I would say Courtney was probably 8 years old, and I had someone at the bookstore say to me that there were no children's books. So I actually signed up for a children's book class at CMC, which got canceled, and the teacher ended up mentoring me. So that was probably when Courtney was about 8, and she's 31 now.
Okay. So it's getting to the point where a second generation now is coming up on those stories.
Right, and that's why we did Kip, because now, of course, Kip is Courtney's dog.
Right.
And he goes on the adventures with her. Huh. And she's very sporty, too.
Did you have any idea, Jill, that it would be this successful?
I had no idea.
Huh. You kind of hoped, I'm sure.
Oh, of course. But well, yes, very, very pleasantly surprised.
Huh. I read a 2004 interview that Stuart Oxenhorn did with you. And in that, he said that you had sold upwards of 50,000 copies. Now, that was 13 years ago. So you've done very well with these, haven't you?
We have. It's been amazing. Well, and that includes all the books, of course. I have,
right,
besides the Christmas in Aspen book, I also have two cookbooks as well. And then after sort of the Fraser series, we decided to go ahead and do Fraser's memoir and The Blue Bottle, which is a story that takes Courtney and Fraser and Maggie on an adventure into the Caribbean, where we spent many years sailing. And so that's sort of an offshoot. It's more of a young adult novel for the kids who had gone through the whole Fraser series but still wanted to know what Fraser was up to.
Okay.
So this is like my 12th book, so it's a lot of books.
You say that The Blue Bottle was a young adult book, so it's not a children's book. Did that make it a different challenge for you writing-wise?
It actually was really fun. I had been waiting to do a book like this for a long, long, long time, and yes, it was challenging because I didn't really know how to do it, but I just jumped into it and kind of figured it out. It's been really fun, and I've been enjoying going down to the Caribbean and selling that book. And, I teach classes down there as well. So that's, yeah, definitely different, but definitely fun.
You say teach classes. So what is it that you teach young upcoming writers about?
So what I do is I go into schools and or classrooms, and I just talk to them about the process of writing. You know, they get so intimidated about writing, which is why I also hold a third and fourth grade writing contest every year. But I just try to explain to them that, you know, you don't have to come up with an elaborate plan. Basically, it's just one simple idea. And then I do this kind of cool little, I call it the simple sunshine story. And I actually show them the rays of the sun. In the very middle, which is where the sun is the idea, just one little idea. And I will actually show them from my stories how, you know, it's just, you know, here's a dog, Fraser. And then, you know, we have Courtney and we have Taylor and we have Katie and we have skiing and we have, you know, going up to lunch. And so we tie all these like little tiny threads of ideas together. And the next thing you know, we have a story. And the kids get to actually work on that after I leave. And so, I always say if I inspire one or two kids, I've done my job.
Now, do you do classes or workshops for adults too who want to write?
I don't really do adults. I haven't really had that opportunity because I think adults all have that within them. And I think there's so many other classes that are offered from other adults. And because I'm a children's book author primarily, I feel that that's kind of my, you know, topic in life. But I think adults are definitely wanting to write at, you know, certain ages, especially after they retire.
Okay. Well, you obviously had that within you, but I wonder how you uncovered that. I mean, I know you've been in Aspen a long time, and you know, at least when you first hit Aspen, or when anybody first hits Aspen, they have to do what they have to do just to stay there. So if that means three or four jobs, they do three or four jobs. But somewhere along the line, you realized you could write. How did that happen for you?
Well, I had always loved writing. That was always my, you know, favorite subject in school was, you know, English and literature. And I took a creative writing class in high school, and one of which I was not graded on. And it was just very exciting to get out my journal every day. So I've been a person who journals almost every day, which is what I also encourage the kids to do. And so for me, it was one of those things where one day we were hiking in the mountains and we were talking about Christmas and how cool Christmas is. And we just decided, my friend and I would run around to all the different homes in Aspen and photograph the Christmas trees. And so we did, and we, you know, photographed the Christmas carolers. This is back in the 70s. And we went to do a slideshow for our husbands in the spring, and there were beautiful photographs, just tons and tons of them. And, I mean, my husband looked at me and said, well, you know how expensive four-color photographs are to publish, because we were both in the advertising business at the time. And I knew I couldn't really afford it. I tried to get a loan, and it didn't work. So I went back to all the families that I had photographed their trees and interviewed them and found out about how they celebrated Christmas differently. And that kind of flowed into different, you know, how did Kringle come about? How did presents come about? How did lights on the Christmas tree come about? So I did a lot of research, and then I went into the Country Day School and had a contest for stories and poems. And then John Denver worked right across from us and was a friend and let me use his song, Alfie the Christmas Tree. And I got other poems from other adults and stories. And the third section was all recipes. So it kind of just took a life of its own on. And it was back in the days where you actually cut and pasted a book, which is another thing I show the kids how the technology has changed. From sitting on a computer, we didn't even have computers then. I did it all by a typewriter, and then we cut and pasted these boards. You remember those days with the blue lines?
Yeah.
So that was very tedious, but actually really, really fun. And so I was able to borrow the money from my brother, who is a big... you know, he's a big financial guy, and he had taken a year off and was betting on the racetracks. So he had money to loan me, and so I was able to publish that book. And that led to the cookbooks, which led to the kids' books. So it's been a really fun career.
Well, Jill, I'm talking to you because next week, Wednesday to be exact, you are giving a reading and presumably a book signing at the Carbondale Library along with a couple of other authors. Maybe you could talk a little bit about that before I let you go.
Sure. So it's at the Carbondale Library. It's 6 p.m. And two friends of mine, Linda Flynn and Corey Kiernan, we all took a class together, interestingly enough, a couple of years ago from Michael Conniff and Rick Johnston at Colorado Mountain College. And it was publishing in this new century. I've always published my books the traditional way, and with Kip, I knew I needed to do it the new way. I couldn't, you know, publish 1,000 books at a time. So we took this class, and they were budding authors, and after the class was over, the three of us got together quite often and shared our work and worked on proofing and editing and the whole process. So it was really fun for me to see them publish their first book. And so we, the three of us have decided we'll get together and talk about our processes, and I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
That's really great. Jill Shealy, thank you so much for joining Express Yourself today.
Thank you, Luke.
Be sure to visit kdnk.org to hear the complete conversation that I had with Jill, as well as last week's chat with Corey and Linda. Stay with us. Ed Jurdy coming up next on today's Express Yourself.
Sun. The dust kicking. making sound and the memory of their love lingers on. Nothing to hear but the hum and the whine of the tires. Nothing to see but the mounds playing tricks on the eyes.
That's a little taste of a song called Road Dust Wheels from the new CD from the band of heathens called Duende. Well, for more than a decade, the band of heathens has wowed Carbondale, and it's probably safe to say that Carbondale has wowed the band of heathens. They return again tonight to play a free show on 4th Street here in downtown Carbondale as a benefit for KDNK and in celebration of the Carbondale Creative District. KDNK's Amy Kimberly caught up with Ed Jurdy of the band last Monday while he was sitting at DIA.
I'm here with Ed Jurdy from the Band of Heathens. Band of Heathens are going to be performing tonight in Carbondale. It is a celebration for the Carbondale Creative District and a benefit for KDNK Community Radio. How are you, Ed?
Doing great, Amy. Thanks for having me.
You know, it's particularly exciting to have this conversation with you because as I was reading about Duende and what it means, what that word means, a quality of inspiration and passion, a heightened sense of emotion, expression, and authenticity, a spirit, I felt like that was very much what Carbondale is about and what the Carbondale Creative District in this whole Roaring Fork Valley. It's a spirit that we really embody. And I feel like you guys really approach your music as artists. And it leads me to wonder, where do life and art intersect for you?
Everywhere, to be honest with you, you know, I mean, playing music, you know, I think as a collective and individually we strive to live a life of art and music and creating things, you know? So, I think the intersection is at all points, you know, there's not really a whole lot of separation between life and art. They both certainly inform each other all the time.
And so when you go into a recording and you approach that, is it a lot of sitting down with everyone in the band and talking about it? Is it a lot of brainstorming? Is it working through many songs and then bringing them down? Is it all of that? You know, how does it work for you guys when you begin to a concept of an album?
Yeah, it's all of that. It's always different every time, to be honest with you. But this time specifically on Duende, though, we started with a lot of material. I mean, we had upwards of 40 songs, which is far more than we've ever had in the past. We started a folder online, a Dropbox folder, basically, and everyone was just uploading songs that they were writing and passing ideas around and things of that nature. So we really kind of began, you know, with the 40, and we didn't really, when we started recording, there wasn't necessarily a bent to do a record. We started working in 2 or 3 day chunks at a time, you know, recording 3 or 4 songs here and there, which was kind of a good starting point, to the record. And we started being able to focus on a direction and kind of, it, you know, what we were after became a lot more apparent to us after a couple of rounds of recording for 3 days at a time. You know, we were just finding that the material there was a little bit more rock and roll based, a little bit more band performance based was the stuff that was kind of resonating and coming to life best. So we then kind of started pursuing the material that fit under that umbrella better. And that's really when I think the whole thing came together in a nice way.
Yeah, and you know, I always find when I watch you guys, and I think that's what I was craving, which is kind of how this whole thing got started. I was, wow, I haven't seen the Band of Heathens here in Carbondale. And there was always a very special connection between the band and the audience when you guys have played in the past. But that word authenticity is something we're struggling with here. And how do we retain our authenticity while cost of living skyrockets and the world's going crazy and, you know, any number of factors? And for a band, you know, every time I watch a Heathen show, I feel that authenticity. But yet, night after night, it can't always be easy to get to that place. You know, what is it for you? How do you do that?
Well, that's interesting. I think, I mean, first of all, I think, you know, the audience really made the band. You know what I mean? Like, a band is kind of an unformed thing until people that like the music and support it and listen to it come out and see the band play, you know, and we, that's really where we started. We started by playing live first and foremost. I think in terms of, you know, after doing it for a number of years and trying to have it resonate every night when you go out to do it, it's just, you know, you try to just keep, you know, the two or three hours, however long the show's going to be, you just try to keep that a sacred space in terms of trying to not let the things of the day get in the way, you know, for good or bad. It's kind of a different zone that you want to try to get into when you're playing. And I'm kind of making this sound like it's an intellectual sort of act, but I think it's more just of a, you know, it's a ritual. We've done it, you know, I mean, over 1,000 times at this point, you know.
Right.
And I think, you know, I think there's an expectation from the audience. So I think for us, it's like we want to make sure that we go out and put on a great show and connect with the people that have come and taken time out of their day to be a part of the communion and a part of the celebration. You know, I definitely think that's how we view it. It's kind of one of the last, you know, last ritual gatherings like that where, you know, it's a, kind of just a joyful occasion. And the idea is to sort of blot out all that other stuff, you know, whether it be with, you know, the madness that's going on in the world or, you know, whatever trouble's going on in your personal life. You know, it's, you know, I mean, you know, you're a huge fan of live music. In Carbondale, I think, as a community collective understands this too, you know, there's certainly some magic involved with gathering a bunch of people in a room together and kind of the transfer of energy and these sort of things. I think there's a certain mentality and a certain kind of person that's hungry for those experiences, you know?
Right, right. It's kind of band meditation, you know, you have to empty your mind out of everything but the music, which you mentioned the world and how crazy it is out there. As a songwriter and musician, how is the world these days affecting your music, if it is at all?
That's a great question. You know, I think there's still a bit of digestion going on with all of it, you know? And this record kind of came out most of this was done before a lot of the current upheaval started taking place, you know? But going forward, I'm not sure how it's going to inform the writing necessarily. I'm sure it will in some capacity, as everything tends to do that. You know, I think in a weird way, I feel like it's made these times when we're playing shows and everyone's getting together under the same roof or under the same sky or whatever to, you know, to focus less on the stuff that's not going right and to focus on all the other things that are beautiful that we're enjoying, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And specifically in this case about being a band and playing music, about that specifically, about, you know, us appreciating the audience appreciating us, and, you know, just sort of sharing of that space together, being respectful of one another. You know, it's kind of like it's a little utopian island in a weird way for just a few hours a night, you know? And I think
right.
People are really relishing that escape, which is great for us as a band on stage to sort of be able to participate in that.
Right. I definitely agree with that and see that. We just got done with the Mountain Fair, and it's true. It is that little respite and being joyful and being able to share in something joyful. Though I do want to say in this last album, I mean, you always, throughout your career, have touched on issues. And as you said, a lot of this was written and recorded before the current administration or any other kind of politics happen. But you have Road Dust Wheels, which is about immigration. Mm-hmm. You guys are from Austin, so basically I'm sure immigration has been something you've been witnessing, you know, and we have all been witnessing, but Texas is definitely an entry point down there. So what inspired you to write that at that time, or for that to be written at that time?
A really good question. It just seemed like something that was a pressing issue. I think it's, in terms of that song, it's like, without being too specific, I think there's a common thread that everyone can relate to in that song that's not even necessarily specific to that issue. You know what I mean? Because it's kind of also, you know, besides the idea of actually of immigration per se, it's also kind of just an examination of this idea of a longing for freedom, or, you know, or wanting for something better. I think that's something that, you know, everyone can relate to. Certainly whether they've had the experience of going through something like that or not, you know, I think, literally or figuratively, that's something that's a pretty universal threat.
Yeah. Yeah, and it will continue to be. We're all immigrants. It's so interesting.
Yeah, I think in terms of like the timeliness of things, it's like it's funny, you know, things kind of might be brought more to our attention, like based on, you know, whatever the media story du jour is, or, you know, whatever sort of inflamed the news cycle. But I mean, by and large, issues haven't really changed very much. You know, it's like we become more or less aware of them at certain times, or there's more of a sense of urgency in dealing with them. You know what I mean? So again, like, even though the record came out before the current administration, I think a lot of things that we talk about that you know might seem like they're relevant to that, they are, because those things have always been relevant. You know?
Right, right. Well, you know, another subject you touch upon is technology and connection, and I think I read somewhere that maybe you recorded this album, last album, in analog.
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct?
Yeah, a lot of it. I mean, we recorded the Pro Tools, which is computer based, but I mean, most of the gear that we're playing on and that we used and that it was recorded on, not to go too far down the technical wormhole, but it's all old gear. It's all tube and transistor based gear, you know. So yeah, so there's a lot of what I think people would consider to be, you know, an analog sort of quality to it. We certainly have an analog approach to playing music, I think, you know.
Yeah, and that's exactly where I was getting to. It's very interesting where when you go to a Heathen's show, you feel that instant connection, and a lot of the sound really harkens back for me to, you know, a time where music sounded so rich and warm and full and really could hit you deep. Now, no doubt, younger generations have been raised on, you know, feeling that deep bass boom in their soul, and that's what they can respond to too, which is more mm-hmm. digital sound. But I would say that the Heathens is an analog sound, and that's what I love about it, is it just kind of wraps its arms around you and just makes you move. Do you guys use technology in a lot of different ways in your music, or do you try to kind of, you know, use it where it works? It's all technology.
I think like anything else, the tool, you know, we've used it for a long time, in the recording process. You know, I mean, we use synthesizers on our records. I mean, there's a lot of different ways to incorporate things. I think ultimately our goal with any of those things is to sort of use them in a human way, you know. In making music, it's not about making it perfect. It's about making it have a feeling and an impact and a vibe, you know. And in my opinion, like with some new music, you know, it's like things are really snap tight to a grid and everything is like kind of has an airtight quality about it, and that certainly can be cool in some applications, and that's good for some, you know, for specific kinds of music. But, you know, like if you were like new country music, for example, it's like that's sort of, you know, like, as far as the performances, it's kind of the same thing that's going on with, you know, your traditional band, whether, you know, it's guitars and bass and drums and keyboards, but it's like the way that the music is treated in the post-production, it's sort of stripped of any of that vibe, you know what I mean? It's like there's, right. It's hard to get a sense of what felt like in the room there.
Yeah.
Know? And so for me, as a listener, that kind of music specifically, like, it's alienating because it's sort of, it really has no identity, you know?
Yeah. 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 Well, are you guys all on your cell phones right now in the van, checking?
Yeah, and that's cool. They're great tools. You know, they're useful for a lot of stuff. I mean, we travel a lot.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're away from family, friends, and stuff like that. And it's great to be able to keep in touch with people, you know?
Exactly. So again, in a way, it's made more connection, too. I mean, it goes
sure,
both ways.
Yeah, in a weird way, you know?
Yeah.
I don't think, again, like, it's not necessarily providing us with the full sort of connection that we're after. But, you know, I think in lieu of no connection, it's a great alternative and an option to have, you know? It's the sort of... The trick to that is sort of, you know, I'm guilty of it. We're all guilty of it. And we see it, you know, where, you know, you're in a room of other people that you could be interacting with, but like we're having a very one-on-one personal interaction with our screen or, you know, our cell phone or whatever it may be.
Right.
Which is kind of, you know, there's a evolutionary process going on with it. I'm not sure that we have fully come to grips with it and sorted it out yet. You know, things are moving at a light speed, so... takes a little time, I think, for the human to evolve and catch up.
Right. And no doubt I remember, you know, bands, there used to be strict recording policies, photo policies. I mean, now it's really hard to achieve that. Basically, if you're performing live, that performance can be all over the internet the next day and you have no control over it.
Right. Yeah. And so that's not anything I even worry about anymore. You know what I mean? It's like, I think, you know, you play enough shows, you just try to create a culture in which, you know, you encourage people to be very present as much as they possibly can, you know?
Right.
And I get it. Like, you want to take a film of your favorite song or you want to take a picture of, you know, of a moment with your friends, and it's cool, you know, again, provided, at least in my opinion, provided that's not, like, detracting from anyone else's space or their flow or them enjoying the show, you know?
Right.
And again, I think it's like the magic of being in a room full of people is, you know, hopefully your ability to connect and have something happen that wouldn't have happened had you otherwise not been there.
Well, we are really excited to have you here. I believe you guys are going to do a little meet and greet with KDNK members and the Mountain Fair volunteers. And we're really grateful for that time and interaction because we too like human interaction here. And it's really nice to be up close and personal with performers that you admire and like their music. So thank you for doing that. We will be right downtown on 4th Street Plaza. It's a free show. We're excited to have everyone come out and celebrate together because that's really, I think, one of the most powerful things that music can do is bring those people together and you're all celebrating around a common experience.
So, that's the idea, definitely. And we've been coming to Carbondale a long time, but we know that it's a town that certainly revels and relishes the opportunities to do that. So that's why we always love coming back. You guys have always been super gracious and kind to us.
Well, everybody can find information about Band of Heathens and listen to Duende. It's playing a lot on KDNK, but you can also find it online on even on Spotify, Amazon, or better yet, download it right at bandofheathens.com.
You got it.
Yeah. And will you guys have some CDs at the show?
Oh, yeah, definitely. We'll have a bunch of stuff, vinyl, CDs, all kinds of different merchandise. And even, while in Colorado, we have rolling papers, we have poster art, we have all kinds of stuff.
We didn't even get to talk about your great, even though you used California in that song.
We did.
That is great. And watching the videos, I do highly recommend everyone should go watch some Band of Heathens video, especially it's called Grass is Greener. Is that the
Green Grass of California.
Green Grass of California. That's it. It's It'll definitely make you smile. Well, thanks so much for taking this time, you guys. We look forward to seeing you here and just dancing and having a good night. So safe travels, and see you soon.
Right on, Amy. Thanks.
All right. Thanks, Ed. Talk to you.
Bye.
You can find Amy's complete conversation with Ed at katieandkay.org, and we'll see you over there at the Hootenanny in just a couple hours. Come on down, because Katie and Kay will not be broadcasting the music this time. You have to be analog tonight, so come on down to 4th Street here in downtown Carbondale and get up close and personal with the Band of Heathens and Erica Ryan and all your favorite Katie and Kay DJs. Come on down.